This is RTRN, the Radio Talk Radio Network.
Now, Dr. Joan Kenley, psychologist and author of Whose Body Is It Anyway, brings you Conversation Radio.
Hello, I'm Joan Kenley, and welcome to The Joan Kenley Show, Conversation Radio, where talking really matters. Today, our topic is healthy choices for your horses, bunnies, cats, and dogs. How to care for them each and every day. How to care for them long term. Yes, indeed. And what do they mean in our lives? After all, what are our personal and social responsibilities to them? Well, we have a whole roundtable of outstanding guests here to share what they know. Dr. Jenny Taylor founded the Creature Comforts Holistic Veterinary Center here in the Bay Area, and she is an accomplished veterinarian, working with both standard and alternative treatments in her practice that includes other doctors as well. And Emily Rosenberg has served for many years as a social activist and animal advocate. Her special interest is in helping people benefit more from the companionship of animals. She helped launch San Francisco's Pets Are Wonderful, known as PAWS, P-A-W-S, and she also works closely with Smiley Dog Rescue in Oakland. Rebecca Thomas is an animal body worker performing massage for horses, cats, and dogs for injury recovery, physical therapy, and arthritis, both for general maintenance and high performance. Oh, this is such a great group. I want to say welcome to all of you. It's such a treat to have each of you here in the studio. And just to start us off, I'm going to define what standard and alternative veterinary practices involve just to get the conversation going. Veterinary medicine is the medical science concerned with the diagnosis, treatment, and prevention of diseases in animals. Aside from diagnosing and treating sick and injured animals, veterinarians prevent the transmission of animal diseases and advise owners on the proper care of animals. And alternative medicine techniques are treatments other than conventional Western medicine and are usually called alternative therapies. Usually they are backed by years of use. Some alternative therapies date back thousands of years. The alternative treatments include, but are not limited to, massage, acupuncture, herbology, homeopathy, and chiropractic. So now we've set the stage, and Jenny Taylor, would you tell us how you got involved with animals first in your life, and what brought you to your relationship with animals today?
Well, thank you. I'm really pleased to be here. Probably like everyone else in this room, I was born with an affinity for animals. My mom said that the first word that came out of my mouth was horse. And I was, like many of my colleagues here, also probably collected little pets and animals. They seemed to show up at my doorstep, little injured birds and mice. And my mom was very tolerant of all of this and very encouraging and really helped to nurture this interest and love in animals. When I was 12 years old, I started to work at Your Basic Bird in Berkeley, California, which
well,
is
now
a bird
store. Where I got my bunny.
Yeah, yeah.
They, at a bird store.
It's been there for a while, and it's really fun. I started volunteering and just hanging out, and they couldn't get rid of me.
That's a good thing.
So I started cleaning cages and learned more and more about birds, and pretty soon I was actually helping hatch the little birds from the eggs and raise them, hand-raise them, and tame and train them. And through that experience, I was introduced to a veterinarian who worked with the birds and went and volunteered at her veterinary hospital in Walnut Creek and realized that I just absolutely adored the medical aspects of working with animals. So I started at a very young age focusing on going to veterinary school. I wanted to go, I knew even from age 14 or 15. And my whole focus in the early part of my life was getting the grades and the experience to do that. I went to UC Davis School.
I hear that's one of the very best schools to go to.
Well, I don't have a point of reference because I haven't been to the other ones, but it was a great experience. It's an incredible school, and there are very few veterinary schools in the United States. I think there's only about 28, so it's quite competitive to get in.
I would imagine.
And it was really a great experience. It was very intense, you know, 4 years after 4 years of undergrad. But when I graduated, I had gotten experience working with horses and small animals. They track you into a program where you can pick the animals you want to work with, and I wanted to work with a variety. So I was out practicing and realized that I was just running into some limitations with Western medicine, and that I really wanted to try to find ways to incorporate acupuncture and some of the other modalities that growing up in Berkeley I had heard about all my life. So I sought out extra training in acupuncture through the International Veterinary Acupuncture Society. And once I started offering that to my clients, it just sort of took over my practice and my life and completely changed everything for me. And I went on and got training in homeopathy and chiropractic and other modalities, and it just kind of blossomed from there. And I don't know what I would do if I didn't have these other alternatives to offer my clients, because it's so much nicer to be able to focus on the core issues and the core problems and a holistic approach instead of just trying to focus on kind of eliminating one symptom at a time.
I truly believe in that. And of course, I think many of us in this room, but also our listeners, are using alternative medical approaches for our own health. But I think it hasn't been well publicized that it's available for animals. And that's why it's so exciting to have you on the show today. And everybody in the room believes in all the integral approaches that we can choose for our animals and our pets whom we love so much. And if we're trying certain things on ourselves, it only goes to show you that you can also try these things for horses, cats, dogs, bunnies, birds,
absolutely.
Whatever.
Yeah, most of my clients come to me saying, this is how I treat my children and my family members. Why wouldn't I do this with my pets? And that's absolutely true.
Great. Well, Emily, I'm going to ask you the same question. In other words, when did you first get interested in animals in your life, and what has carried you forward in your very active interest in animals?
I think my first animal that I fell in love with was my stuffed monkey.
Oh, I forgot to mention monkeys earlier.
And I didn't have an animal as a baby. I received Monkey when I was 5.
Mm-hmm.
He was my buddy. And then I had a younger brother who grew up to be a veterinarian, Dr. Daniel Rosenberg. And because of Daniel, we always had animals in the house.
Mm-hmm.
That was easy enough for me, but I didn't really think about having an animal for myself until I moved to San Francisco, to Oakland actually, during the People's Park riots in 1969.
Oh, those, okay.
And at that time, I happened to see somebody walking down the street with a magnificent standard poodle with a long tail. The tail hadn't been docked, and there were beautiful long feathers on it, and I thought, I want that.
Oh.
And I bought my first house many years later, and about 20 minutes after I bought my first house, I got my first standard poodle.
Sounded like you had a plan.
Then I learned I needed a fence and baby gates and all sorts of things for this puppy. Through having my dog Magic, I took many walks around my neighborhood, which was becoming Rock Ridge. And I met an elderly woman with a small old poodle, and I said hello to her a few times. And then one day, the small old poodle was gone, and there was a baby standard poodle. And I became very good friends with this elderly woman. She was 83 years old at the time. She got a dog that grew up to be a 70-pound dog. And I saw that the relationship that I was able to develop with her through the animals was something very precious, and it wouldn't have happened without the animals. And I began to see in her life how important it was to have an animal to care for, to help her walk. Her doctor said the best thing that ever happened for her arthritis was having a big dog that needed real exercise.
And take note, everybody, because that's how a lot of people get exercise, because the dog makes them.
The dog makes them. Gradually, I wanted to know more people. I always wanted to talk to people about their animals, particularly their dogs. And the AIDS crisis came along, and I heard that there was a group starting that was going to help people with AIDS take care of their pets. And I thought, oh, this is perfect for me. I get to do something for my own gay community, and I get to do something with animals. And that's when I helped launch Pets Are Wonderful Support in San Francisco.
Which is a great name. PAWS is about what you just said, the people supporting pets. And, of course, for people who are ill, to have pets nearby and to have an organization saying no matter what happens to you with your finances or your health, you're going to have a pet near you at all times. What a gift. I mean, I think this organization just should be known all over, and I believe it is national, isn't it?
It is national and it's international. There have been organizations formed on the PAWS model a lot in the United States and other places in Europe and around the world, and the model says that people deserve to keep the companionship of their animals even if they're too sick or too poor to care for them themselves.
Emily, what beautiful work you're doing. Great, great. So, Rebecca, we'd like to ask the same question to you. What started you off on the animal trail that you have followed so interestingly till now?
I was born, and I loved animals. It's
just like that.
It was just that
out of the gate.
There you go.
Jenny said horse, and you said animals.
Well, my first interest in horses came when I was on a field trip for a preschool. We went to a barn. And I had really long, kind of straw-colored golden hair at the time, and this horse thought I was a haystack and decided to take a bite out of me and, you know, swung me against the door, and, you know, there was a little sudden start about that.
Sure.
And then ever since then, I've loved horses.
Love at first sight.
Yes.
And people are like, what are you, crazy? But I've always just, I don't know, I got horse saliva in me or something.
It became part of your genetic makeup.
It became part of my genetic makeup, and I am now like a 12-year-old girl trapped in a 40-year-old body. I had dogs my whole life. I was not allowed to have a horse. That wasn't really an option. I got lots of Briar models, but not
what
the
are
actual
Briar
horse.
Models?
They're little toy horses.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
I have a collection of 50 of them in my attic.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Ours probably look pretty similar.
Probably.
And you know, I went through life. I was a theater major in college and lived in Colorado for a while and got terribly depressed and got a dog that saved my life. Because if I did not have this dog that made me go outside to let it go potty, I mean, it gave me my reason for living. This dog came to me. She was abandoned by her mom. And, you know, from 3 hours old, I had this dog that I bottle fed and learned everything from that moment. You know, through the course of my career, I've had a lot of career changes. I became a dot-com casualty, like many, and knew that I had to do something for horses because that was my true love. I love dogs, but horses are the reason that I get up in the morning. And I found a school that does horse massage called Equinology, and I started taking classes from them, and I got certified, and I continue to take classes and keep learning just amazing stuff and doing what I do. There's just no real true words to explain the joy you get when you can really cross over that species boundary and make a difference in the animal's life to make it better and make them feel better and perform the way they want to perform.
It's true. And when we had our little puppy, Maury, when he was just, I don't know, 6 months old, he couldn't get out of his cage one morning. He was crying, and he couldn't walk. And the first thing I thought of was a chiropractor. Mm-hmm. First thing. And I got him to a chiropractor, and he was fine after that. But I know that other doctors wanted to give him steroid shots and other things because he was crying so badly. Someone had played with him the day before with a toy and had actually thrown his back out. Mm-hmm. And we sort of traced that back afterwards. But the truth is that that's what I would think of for myself, so that's what I thought of for my dog. And he's had just such good health. And when he needs a chiropractic treatment, we get him one. So we have a lot to talk about, so everybody just stay where you are. Stay tuned. Coming up, find out how acupuncture, chiropractic visits, and homeopathic remedies can be beneficial for your pets. What's the best way to combine standard treatments with alternative ones? Lots to think about, so don't miss it.
You found it, and it's different. The Joan Kenley Show. Dr. Joan Kenley, taking talk radio to the next level.
I'm Joan Kenley, and you're listening to The Joan Kenley Show, where conversation really matters. And we're talking today about healthy choices for your horses, bunnies, cats, and dogs with veterinarian Dr. Jenny Taylor, Emily Rosenberg, and Rebecca Thomas. And we're going to get into some of the alternative treatments that really do work. And I'm going to talk a little bit about chiropractic and homeopathy, and then the other guests will pick up some of the other treatments that we want you to know about. Chiropractic comes from the Greek words for practicing with the hands when the vertebrae, the bones of the spine, are not aligned correctly. The joint, muscle, nerve, and connective tissue, blood flow, and function of an area can be affected. Chiropractic is a system of manipulation and adjustments of the bones of the spine, and it can restore the normal range of motion that's affected by the joints and release the pressure in the surrounding tissue. An adjustment can result in immediate total relief of symptoms or partial relief. Sometimes the pain may be only temporary, but the animal may move in a certain way and another episode can come back. While chiropractic therapy is normally thought of as pain relief, it should be remembered that since all of our organ systems are controlled by nerves, any disruption of proper nerve flow will also affect function. Correcting the spine can improve the health of some internal organs, such as the heart and the gastrointestinal system. Homeopathy is the system of medicine which determines the underlying energy pattern of the animal and what can be done to bring the energy level back into balance. Homeopathy was used by the Greeks long ago and was formalized by a German physician, Samuel Hahnemann, in the late 1700s. To produce healing, all symptoms in the individual animal must be taken into account. Disease could be likened to an iceberg. We may only see the symptoms above the water, but there is also a lot going on beneath the water. The goal of homeopathy is to cure not only the symptoms of the disease, but to affect positive changes in the energy balance of the animal. So, Jenny, if you would start off telling us how you use chiropractic, homeopathic, acupuncture, anything else in your practice.
Well, all those modalities work together. When we have an animal come into our practice for the first visit, we actually set aside at least an hour to spend time looking at all the issues that are going on in that animal's life, physical problems as well as emotional issues, diet, you know, history. And we are trying to focus on putting together a program of complete and total wellness for that pet. So we will decide on that first visit which modalities we want to use. And we have so many to choose from, including chiropractic and homeopathy, traditional Chinese medicine and acupuncture. A big part of what we focus on in the first visit is diet and dietary recommendations, because I think that the basis of all health is probably a sound diet, and animals are very often on over-the-counter foods that are not necessarily the healthiest thing for them.
But on the other hand, I did order food that's twice baked and five times blessed for years for my dog, and that helped create kidney stones for him. So sometimes when you go with what you think is a lovingly produced food, it isn't the right food for your dog.
Absolutely. And that brings up the point that I try to get across at every visit, is that every patient is individual. And even if you have three dogs and you come in for three separate appointments, you might get three different recommendations on what medications, herbs, homeopathic remedies, and diets that we would recommend, what vaccines we would recommend. It really depends on each individual animal. We're very lucky right now. 10 or 15 years ago, when people would come into my office, I would have to tell them how to put together a home-prepared diet. And because there were so few over-the-counter diets that you could get that were what I would consider healthy. Mm-hmm. And now you can go to Holistic Hound in Berkeley, is a pet store that's run by Heidi Hill, and she is just amazing. She carries every variety of holistic pet food that you can imagine, raw as well as kibble and canned food for cats and dogs.
And what's your opinion about raw food for dogs? You knew I'd ask.
Yeah, well, you know, and that's one of the things as well. You know, people call all the time and ask, you know, what do you recommend that my pet eats? And I try to tell them it just really depends on the individual situation. If you do have a dog that has, you know, kidney stone problems or bladder problems, you're going to recommend a completely different diet. Even some of the prescription diets that are available, I try to avoid the Hill's Science diet, but there are some prescription diets that we do recommend at our hospital that are used for specific medical problems. But in general, I try to recommend something that you can get that is organic or home prepared or the equivalent that you can get from these really high quality stores like Holistic Hound. raw food overall, I think that if it is the right food for your pet, it's probably the healthiest thing to feed them. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of myths, and it is very controversial, and I always encourage people to do a lot of research on their own. We have probably 50 pages of handouts that we give out to people on the pros and cons of feeding raw food and what the best recommendations would be for their pet. But overall, I think that if you think about your own diet and what is recommended for people to eat, a variety of healthy, organic, you know, foods that are not overly prepared and overly cooked, the exact same thing applies to your pet. There's really no difference between them and us in that department. And so if you were to eat, you know, Captain Crunch every day and that's all you had, it's very unhealthy. And it's the same thing for your pet. If they eat Alpo dry food every day for their entire life, they are just not getting the variety and the healthy nutrients that they need.
Well, what about acupuncture? And how do you get an animal, a cat or a dog or a horse, to sit still for an acupuncture treatment?
Well, one of the things that amazed me the most when I went through my training was how incredibly receptive the animals are to acupuncture. They actually seem to enjoy it. And I have yet to meet an animal that will not let me put needles in them, cats or dogs or horses. Some of them will only let you put one or two needles in them, but most of the time, if you can get one or two calming points in, there are a couple of specific acupuncture points that are very good at helping to calm the pet down and relax them. If you can get them to hold still and just relax, maybe use a little T-touch, rescue remedy, some massage, just put your hands on them and calm them and relax them first and then kind of sneak a needle in.
Once the diversionary techniques.
Exactly. Yes. I have no problems bribing pets and giving them little snacks while we're doing this. But very routinely, people tell us that their dogs and cats, and especially the dogs, just love coming to our office because it's a positive experience for them. And if they have another veterinarian that they go to, they seem to be fearful of that office because of the experiences they've had with blood draws and, you know, surgeries. Although we do all of that at our hospital, too, and the animals seem to, if they're introduced right off the bat to the more positive experiences like the homeopathy and the acupuncture, they seem to relate that to the hospital in general and are okay, even if we take them in the back and do nail trims and ear cleaning and, you know,
and do you
like
treat
that.
Rabbits as well?
Mm-hmm. We do. We actually work with Carolyn Harvey, who is at VCA Bay Area Pet Hospital. Mm-hmm. She's one of the founders of the House Rabbit Society here in the Bay Area, which is an excellent organization for rabbits and rabbit owners. And she works with rabbits for she's been doing this for years, working on medical problems, and she has just recently developed an interest in acupuncture and herbs. She's taking the herbal courses herself. She brought her little dog Russell to us and saw how well he had responded to acupuncture. She started referring a lot of her E. caniculi, which is a case that rabbits get where they have a neurological problem, where they have a head tilt and paralysis, and she began referring those to us to work on with acupuncture and homeopathy, and we got such a positive response that she's referring just about everything else over to us now, too.
I can imagine. Well, I had a rabbit for 8 years who was so wonderful and so smart and so playful, and people were always surprised that he was smart, but actually rabbits have a lot of smarts, and I used to have a group that met once a week, and he would know exactly what time it was for them to go, and he would hop up on his cage at just at 10 o'clock, and if I took trips, he would pout, and when I met my husband, he was jealous, and so he had quite a personality, and it took him 2 years to teach me to play fetch with him. So, I mean, he had this little orange wooden carrot. I didn't realize he wanted me to take it and then give it back and run around. So anyway, I learned a lot from that pet, and it was a very heart-opening experience to have that rabbit, too. Yeah. So, Emily, you were talking about your poodles, and you had a situation with them.
Well, I had the strangest situation. My dear friend Linda, who had helped me care for my poodle for many years, we were next-door neighbors and we shared dog care. Linda came down with lymphoma, and I spent quite a bit of time at the hospital with her, and I came home from the hospital one morning, and my 8-year-old poodle walked into a wall, and walked into a wall repeatedly that morning.
Wow.
So strange.
And I took her to the specialty veterinary clinic, and the internist and the neurologist looked at her, and we never did truly diagnose what was wrong with my magic, but as part of the support for her, we began to go to Cheryl Schwartz for veterinary acupuncture. Mm. Cheryl was one of the pioneers in veterinary acupuncture. And the poodle had no problem lying down and having Cheryl touch her with the needles, which are, in fact, very fine needles.
Indeed.
Yeah.
And she was always just fine. Cheryl spent quite a bit of time with her. The dog was on the floor. We'd all sit on the floor. We'd talk to the dog. The needles would go in gradually, and it sounds like that's what Jenny does. It was never treated as a medical procedure.
No.
It was treated as we're here together and we're touching this dog for healing and health.
It is, and it's always a group process. You know, there's as much healing coming from the owner of the pet as there is from the practitioner. So, and almost always with the dogs, we're on the floor. I don't think I've used my examination table in, you know, 5 years for a dog. So,
and I think that's a very comfortable place for especially a big dog. They're on the floor.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and what I find for humans or for animals is that stone cold stainless steel table.
Oh, yeah.
For animals, there's no towel on it, there's no blanket. They don't like the table. Even if they like the vet, even if they like going to see the vet, they don't like that table. So I love the idea of being on the floor with them and
Absolutely.
Not having them, you know, get a cold fanny because that table is part of the examination.
It's completely unnecessary. When we have put animals, cats on the table, we actually use bathroom rugs and carpets because it sticks to the table very well. They never even see the silver part.
That's good.
And it's much nicer. We create little hidey holes for cats to hide in and, you know, cubby holes for them. So,
well, that's great. And just quickly, as we finish this segment, Rebecca, why don't you tell us a story that you might have about your body work with a horse?
Well, for me, I use a form of acupuncture called acupressure.
Very
because
good.
I'm not a veterinarian, I'm not allowed to put needles in a horse, and
mm-hmm.
I'm very comfortable not putting needles in a horse.
Yes.
But I use acupressure, and Jenny has a client that she's done acupuncture on that I've supported with acupressure, like a veterinary prescription. I said, what points should I use? She gave me the points, and I supported what she's been doing. I use the acupressure for horses and for dogs. It works really well with arthritis and other types of injuries and stuff like that. And I, because I'm not a vet and I can't diagnose or treat a specific injury, I use acupressure basically to help rebalance the animal, to make them happier. So if a point needs tonification, I can tonify, or if it needs some boosting, I can boost it. But I'm not doing it to treat a specific ailment, but I try to just bring general overall balance with the acupressure to the animal.
Sounds like a really feel-good job that you have.
It is a feel-good job. I love it.
If your pet needs chemotherapy, find out what can make your pet more comfortable. Why is good dental care and teeth cleaning for horses, cats, and dogs so critically important? We'll tell you the whole story. Stay tuned.
There's more in a moment with Dr. Joan Kenley. What's not to love about the Joan Kenley Show, where talking truly matters.
Welcome back to the Joan Kenley Show. I'm Joan Kenley, and we're having a great conversation about healthy choices for your horses, bunnies, cats, and dogs. Our special guests are Dr. Jenny Taylor, Emily Rosenberg, and Rebecca Thomas. Welcome back. So, Jenny, tell us about what you do to support animals who are going through chemotherapy, and how do you make them more comfortable?
Well, we get a lot of referrals from the local veterinary oncologists who have learned from experience that if they refer their chemotherapy patients and their radiation patients to us and allow us to do acupuncture on them either right before or right after their chemotherapy treatments, that they tolerate the chemotherapy a lot better. Their white blood cell counts stay elevated, which is often the limiting factor. If the white cell count drops below a certain point, they can't have the chemotherapy treatment. So it's critical to keep the white cell counts up and also keep them eating, especially cats. Cats, when they undergo radiation or chemotherapy or any majorly stressful, you know, medical procedure, just stop eating. They kind of go on a hunger strike. And if they don't eat, then they can have some severe metabolic problems and lose weight and just lose the will to live. So acupuncture, herbs, homeopathy really helps to stimulate their appetites and just give them that kind of will to live and enjoy life.
Well, what have you noticed are the most frequent surgeries needed by dogs and cats as they age? And we know that there's cancer, but what about other problems, gastrointestinal problems or heart problems or kidney problems? What do you see coming through your clinic mostly?
Well, you know, dogs and cats are very different. The one thing they do have in common is dental disease, and that's something that we do work and focus on a lot in our practice. We actually offer, in many cases, anesthesia-free dental cleaning where we will clean an animal's teeth without putting them under general anesthesia. Mm-hmm. We do it on a case-by-case basis to make sure that they will tolerate the handling and the, you know, letting us get in their mouths like that, and whether or not they need to have any teeth pulled. If they do, then they probably will have to be sedated. But dental care with aging is a really, really important part of general wellness.
Does it affect their hearts or their arteries? Or tell us a little bit more about that.
Absolutely. When you have severe dental disease, and if you ever look in a dog or a cat's mouth and you see all that plaque and tartar building up, it actually traps bacteria along the gum line, and that causes them to have a very high bacterial count in their mouth that can spread into their blood system, and that can cause endocarditis or heart problems. It can lead to chronic bladder infections. It can be a really serious issue just for their overall health and appetite, their general well-being. I've had some elderly pets where I've cleaned their teeth, and it seems like they've become 5 years younger, you know, after the procedure. It really makes a huge difference.
And it's something I think that pet owners don't think about that much unless their veterinarian is actually saying this is time to do this and not just to do a cursory job of sort of picking through the teeth. That isn't really what we're talking about. We're talking about deep cleaning,
right,
and really looking at keeping the gums solid and healthy.
Absolutely.
It's also really important for horse care because a lot of people don't realize that horses' teeth continually grow. And as they chew and stuff like that, it wears the teeth differently. And their teeth can grow and they can get these things called ramps or points, and they can be really painful and cause the jaw to go out of alignment. And
oh,
in the jaw
goodness.
Going out of alignment, it causes the spine to go out of alignment. And then as the spine goes out of alignment, it causes problems down the road as far as lameness issues and whatnot. So dental care, I'm a big advocate for it for horses and, you know, getting it done regularly. And there are specialists that are equine dentists. And I know people find that hard to believe. But
I think it's a wonderful thing to hear about.
They are there.
Clearly, it's a very serious thing if the horse is having these growths or these problems because it's being overlooked.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's really interesting. I've always said that rabbits are like little tiny horses because rabbits' teeth grow over time as well, and they have to be floated or filed down.
Ah.
And that's one thing that a lot of rabbit owners don't know.
I didn't know that either.
Yeah.
But when my rabbit got very old, because we always gave him a lot of hard things to eat, the carrots and so forth, his teeth actually got shorter.
Mm-hmm.
And this one vet said this rabbit has lived 2 years on love because he was having other problems as well. But we loved him so much that probably he had a lot of symptoms of old age that maybe would have meant that he naturally might have died earlier, but was such a sweet character. And the story about the rabbit is that one day he was just wonderful, and then the next day he put his head on the bottom of the cage and was wheezing, and I just knew this was it. So I walked around and I held him, and I was sitting in the family room with him on my lap, and I said to him, "We'll take care of you tomorrow if you're still in pain or uncomfortable, but we'll just have tonight with you." And I sat with him, and the cat was licking his feet. My son was standing behind me. My husband was on the telephone long distance, and at that moment the rabbit died.
It's amazing.
And I mean, it's just really a special thing. It was as if I promised that animal at the beginning of his life, when I bought him at that very bird, that I would be with him at end of life. And I think that's a circle that's important for us, even though we are sorrowful and grieving, that we have a certain connection with animals. And in fact, we're going to get into that in another segment about this relationship with our animals. But what are things that you would like to say people should check up in terms of allergies? I mean, Emily, did your pets ever have allergies to anything, or the pets that you cared for, that you had many pets that you brought in that were strays? Or
I've taken care of many, many animals, more than I can count, but mm-hmm. I don't have experience with allergies.
I knew a horse that was allergic to carrots.
Oh, my goodness.
and alfalfa hay, which is probably better that it was allergic to alfalfa hay, because that's not the best hay for them.
But, that's good to know.
But it's the woman who owned this horse, you know, went to a lot of lengths with homeopathic remedies, bee pollen and stuff like that, to help cure the horse. Because anytime someone snuck him a carrot and might not have been there when it happened,
oh, truly,
the horse would break out in hives. And it was just a very sorry sight to see a horse with hives.
Oh, yeah. Very uncomfortable.
There's a lot of treatments out there for allergies.
Yeah. Well, also, some allergies can come in the form of skin rashes.
Absolutely.
And so maybe, Jenny, you could address that a little bit, because I know our Schnauzer has had skin allergies from time to time, and he's gotten over them.
Allergies are a huge part of our practice. We see them coming in. We see a lot of skin cases. A whole lot of people self-refer because they're going to their regular veterinarians who are putting their dogs or cats on steroids and antibiotics for these chronic recurrent skin allergies and rashes that they're getting. And in a lot of these cases, if you put these pets on a special diet, it could be a food allergy that they're allergic to. They could be allergic to something very simple in the house, like a wool carpet. Mm-hmm. They could be allergic to something in the yard, trees,
or even
fleas.
Their food.
Absolutely. And so, you know, you have to be a little bit of a detective and take the time and the effort to discuss with the owner all the intricacies of that pet's lifestyle and what they eat and how they've eaten. We ask owners to keep diaries of when these skin allergies flare up and what seems to have preceded it. And you can often, just by eliminating certain things in their diet or their lifestyle, solve the problem without giving them medications.
Terrific. Well, we have a lot more to talk about. We will be right back with much, much more. Do stay tuned. Learn about the benefits of dog parks. No matter what, pets need exercise, and so do their owners. Did you know there are programs for pups and ponies to meet and greet? Stay around for this and more.
Ready for more? Dr. Joan Kenley continues in a moment. Log on to joankenley.com, that's K-E-N-L-E-Y, to learn more and listen to archived shows. Invite your friends and family to listen to The Joan Kenley Show.
I'm Joan Kenley, and you're back with The Joan Kenley Show. We're talking about healthy choices for your horses, bunnies, cats, and dogs with veterinarian Dr. Jenny Taylor, animal advocate Emily Rosenberg, and animal body worker Rebecca Thomas.
Welcome back. And Emily, I'd love to hear you tell us about your work in social activism and animal advocacy in the work that you've been doing recently.
With the launching of PAWS almost 20 years ago, we began to see how important the human-animal bond is. And indeed, there's a whole organization devoted to promoting the human-animal bond called the Delta Society.
Oh, that's great to know about.
Yes. I haven't been active in that, but I think my work parallels theirs. So in addition to supporting individuals who need help caring for their treasured pets, I began to see that people wanted to go out and be social with their dogs.
Mm-hmm.
In recent years, the chance to take dogs out in public to play has been limited as our cities and towns and suburbs become more crowded, more freeways, more shopping centers, all the places that we used to go to run our dogs and maybe our horses, they're paved over.
That's right.
So we've had to create special places where people with dogs are welcome and those dogs can play off-leash. Dogs need daily exercise.
Absolutely.
And I think most responsible dog owners know this, but it doesn't mean that the owner itself wants to have exercise when the dog is having it. We'd love to see people out jogging with the dogs at their sides, and those dogs should have been checked to see if they're physically fit to do that jogging, and they should start gradually on the sport of jogging the same way a human does.
And don't you have to be careful when it's really, really hot weather not to overly exercise a dog during those times?
You do. You need to be very conscious that your dog's schedule is not necessarily the schedule that's most convenient for you.
That's true.
On the other hand, as we've said, the fact that the dog does want to go out almost any time, day or night, is a good motivation to get out in the rainy weather or the busy days. So as public space accessible to dog owners has closed, we've had to create dog-friendly spaces, and usually those are referred to as dog parks.
Mm-hmm.
I'm beginning to think that we need to call those PIDOs, parks for dog owners.
Okay.
Because the concept of dog park is very hard for non-dog owners to understand, and people tend to think that this park is going to be a publicly funded place where people can drop off their dogs while they go to work. And
that's a different facility.
That is called a dog daycare facility.
That's right.
The parks where dog owners are welcome are parks for dog owners, and there is where the dog and the responsible adult and maybe some other family members will go and let that dog off leash for 20 minutes or for 2 hours. And the fun there is watching the animals play. I call it the urban safari.
That's a good name.
Everybody's turned on television and or been able to go to Africa and watch the animals in their natural environment.
Yes.
And being able to see dogs at play is a wonderful, wonderful thrill.
And socialization among dogs is a very healthy thing, I understand.
Yeah. It makes dogs much easier to live with in the city and in the home. And the second socialization that goes on is among the people.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's almost become the best place to go and meet your new partner or spouse are the dog parks now.
Dating services.
Yeah, absolutely.
For free.
And it's a great place to network, too. You know, I can't tell you how many people say they heard about my veterinary office at the dog park talking to one of my clients who's been there and spoken about us. So.
And we hear regularly about elderly people who use the dog park, and if that person isn't there for a day or two, other dog park users will check up. What's happened to Sylvia? Mm-hmm. Sylvia and Rocky aren't here today. We need to go to Sylvia's house and find out. So they have become a community gathering place. And one of the wonderful things about this is that the dog park is a cross-class, cross-economic.
Intergenerational
mm-hmm. cross-neighborhood place. So while people may have money to go to a gym or they may be young enough to play soccer, those are sort of separate activities, but people who come together because of their commitment to their dogs have a very special kind of bond. And I think that communities are recognizing and supporting that bond more by beginning to build parks for dog owners.
Well, if you look at the park in Alameda, where I used to live, it was a very hard-fought battle to get that park placed there, and once it finally was put into existence, it is probably the most used part of all of the Alameda Park there, and you see that at all of these dog parks. Even if there's been some resistance for them to be developed and built, once they're built, they're just crammed full of people, and they're extremely a good use of public funding, in my opinion.
And it's absolutely the least expensive way to provide for the most number of people.
What's also nice about them is that it's a neutral place. Dogs that tend to be territorial on their own property can get a lot more socialization because they don't protect the dog park.
Mm-hmm.
And so it enables them to have the interaction between other dogs in a less aggressive way than if they were on leash or in their own yard and seeing a dog walking outside the fence, they can get, you know, pretty aggressive in that sense.
Well, when we're working our dog in the hills here in Oakland, our small, tiny little dog thinks he's as big as the very big dogs, and so he barks at them as if there should be some kind of equal exchange. And why is it that small dogs think that they have ownership of the territory no matter what other kind of dog walks by?
It's a compensation.
Is that right?
Napoleonic complex.
Okay.
And I also have that problem with some of the smallest dogs are the ones that bark the most at the horses.
I would imagine.
And, you know, you've got a 10-pound dog barking at a 1,200-pound animal. You know, there's not really a...
There's no equalization there.
Well, we do actually have a unique program dealing with dogs and horses together, and it happens right here at the East Bay Regional Parks.
Yes.
It's called the Pup and Pony Meet and Greet.
Oh, I love the name.
Yeah. And it's so, so important. When I'm on a horse, you know, riding around in the hills, there's so many people who don't understand that you have to give the right of way to the horse.
Oh, yes.
And they think, well, you know, it's my park too, and my dog can run around, but if they don't have control, they're putting the horse rider, themselves, and the dog in danger.
Very much so.
And there have been so many, I hate to be breed-specific, pit bull attacks on horses as of late, because the owners don't realize what can happen, and it's frightening. And if you've ever been on a horse that's been attacked by a dog, it is one of the scariest things that could ever possibly happen.
That's a terrible
and
thing
so,
to envision,
so
really.
So having the dogs understand that the horses are different and they can, you know, and be able to get to know them and smell them and realize that they're different, but they're not something you can attack. They're not something you can go up and bite the back of the heels of, or their necks or something like that, mm-hmm. because of fear.
Can you name that organization again?
It's the Pup and Oakland Dog Owners Group. We're on the internet at odogparks.org.
And we'll have that on the web for everybody to see.
And it's the Dog and Pony Meet and Greet.
Yeah, but in the website, you need to go to the section called Community Partners.
Oh, okay.
This is a partnership between the dog owners and the horse owners. And what we do is we educate the dog owners about how their dogs need to behave around horses on the trail. And we let the dogs become desensitized to the horses.
Mm-hmm. What a great program. Well, we need another program for my little dog. He's afraid of children.
Mm.
And when he was younger, someone had a baby in their arms here, and he whined and came up to me and wanted to be held and didn't know what that baby was. And then just a few days ago, and he's 9 years old now, a two-year-old and a four-year-old came through the door with a friend of ours, and he, again, was scared. Mm. And what's that about?
Well, I think it's very difficult to say. We hear that a lot when people come in and have behavioral questions about mm-hmm. their pets, where a dog will be afraid of something very specific. The UPS delivery person is one, and it's, you know,
Maury's not afraid of him. in fact, the FedEx guy's afraid of Maury.
Well,
and he's just this little tiny thing.
It's fascinating what they can be afraid of. The reason I brought that up is I have one client whose little Chihuahua is afraid of the brown outfit that the UPS driver. So the FedEx guy, the mailman,
okay.
they can all come up, but it's and it's not that specific UPS person. It's they have a variety. So. You know, I think that if it's something that a very young puppy is showing a fear of right from the start, that there has to be something, you know, innately inherited going on there and not something that they developed over time. But a lot of times it is due to a bad experience they had as a puppy or a youngster.
Well, there's so much to learn. So from cats to dogs to horses to bunnies, we've had a great hour here. I'd like to say to everyone, thanks so much for listening. We want you to know that The Joan Kenley Show brings you conversation radio that's co-created for your listening pleasure with our guests. You can find out more about today's subject and how to reach our guests on my website, joankenley.com. That's K-E-N-L-E-Y, where all of our shows are archived, downloadable, and podcastable 24/7. We're also on iTunes and all the top 10 podcast services. Huge thanks go to those who made this show possible, Peter B. Collins and Christy Healy, and here in the studio, Daniel Fletcher, program producer, engineer, and technical producer. This is Joan Kenley inviting you to tune in for more Conversation Radio.
This is RTRN, the Radio Talk Radio Network.